Court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 040890, City of Galveston versus State of Texas from Galveston County and the First Court of Appeals District. Number 040923, Dr. Richard Jackson versus David and Carolyn Axelrod from Harris County and the 14th Court of Appeals District. And 050006, National Plan Administrators, Inc. and CRS Marketing Agency versus National Health Insurance Company from Travis County and the 3rd Court of Appeals District. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these matters and will take a brief recess between each argument. We expect to conclude the arguments before noon. These proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the arguments should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is now ready to hear argument in 040890, City of Galveston versus State of Texas.
May it please the court, Mr. Ramon Villada will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner for 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This case arises out of a collision between two governmental functions. Both functions, the state highway construction and the city's waterworks, are performed for the benefit of the people, all of the people of Texas. That's what a governmental function is. The loss must be borne by the people of Texas. The money in the state treasury and the local treasury is the people's money, not the government's at either level. So the issue in this case, very simply, is who speaks for the sovereign people of Texas concerning how the public's loss is adjusted? The city's position is that it is the legislature of Texas that speaks for the sovereign people in this regard, or the people themselves through a constitutional amendment waiving sovereign immunity.
Constitutional amendment? You think it would take that to waive immunity?
No, it takes the legislature's act, the people speaking through the popular branch of government, Your Honor, or a constitutional amendment such as Article 1, Section 17, which provides a waiver of sovereign immunity for a taking without compensation by the state.
And you don't think the state's immunity is from the common law?
I certainly understand that the common law is the original source by which the sovereign immunity doctrine was recognized. That's correct, Your Honor.
And we're the arbiters of the common law.
That's correct.
So do you think that we could abolish immunity or hold that it doesn't exist in certain circumstances?
That certainly has been the approach that's been taken by a number of jurisdictions throughout the country. Based on what those jurisdictions regard as being the foundation, the theoretical foundation for the immunity, that the courts have taken it upon themselves to abolish immunity. There are a number of states, for example, that say that sovereign immunity is a relic of the past. It existed because the king could do no wrong, and since we don't have a king any longer, and everyone acknowledges that the state indeed can do wrong, that the doctrine is an artifact of the past and should be done away with. This court in Taylor most recently recognized that the theoretical foundation for sovereign immunity has moved to protect the public fisc. That immunity exists to protect public dollars. Public dollars are the way by which the people of Texas give life to the state government. I mean, the people call the state government into existence through the Constitution, but the people actuate the state government through its funding. And it's the legislative branch of government that is best suited to make the fundamental allocation decisions concerning the level of government that we have, as well as the types of governmental services that are provided.
And in Taylor, just 3 short years ago, we recognized that it's not foreclosed that the judiciary may abrogate immunity.
That certainly,
you acknowledge
certainly,
that.
Certainly the court has made that statement in numerous of its opinions that the court reserves under certain circumstances not yet defined that the court has the power to abolish immunity.
Well, doesn't your separation of powers argument depend on the legislature having the constitutional authority exclusively to waive sovereign immunity?
I think that that when you look at the course of the development of our jurisprudence in this area, what you will see is that very early on, the courts regarded it as much more of its responsibility to look for waivers of immunity and find the contours of it. As time has gone on, the decisions of this court have recognized that to be a legislative province under all but certain circumstances the court has yet to define. On top of that, we see in 1987 that the people of Texas adopted a constitutional amendment which moved to the legislature the power to define governmental functions. And in fact, the legislature, pursuant to that constitutional power given to them by the people, moved the waterworks functions from the proprietary category to the governmental category. That's important, I think, very important in this case for this reason. That pronouncement of the people carries with it inference of a number of values that the people articulated in the Constitution. One is that the people recognize that there is such a thing as local governmental immunity and that the people want that governmental immunity. And the second thing is that the legislature has always had the power to waive sovereign immunity. The people ratified that constitutional amendment for the purpose of giving the legislature the power to expand local governmental immunity where it previously had not existed. And so you can see two things going on. Recognition by the people that there is local governmental immunity and a constitutional amendment that empowers the legislature, notwithstanding the open courts provision or any other provision of the Constitution, to move into an immunized category local governmental functions that were previously regarded by the courts to be outside of the scope of immunity. And so from this constitutional provision, I would argue that there is a constitutional foundation in our state's constitution for local governmental immunity, and that the people have communicated to all branches of government through that constitutional amendment that they wanted the governmental immunity expanded, which the legislature has done, and that they wanted the legislature to have a say in declaring what sorts of governmental functions are within the doctrine of immunity. And so whereas the immunity at one point in our history was a construct entirely by the judicial branch, it has, since 1987 at least, and tort reform at that time, been a doctrine that the legislature has had some hand in expanding, and all done pursuant to a directive from the sovereign people. One thought that I wanted to share with the court very quickly before another question comes my way is that we have, in this case, two aspects of the immunity doctrine that are before the court. There is immunity from suit and immunity from liability. And in the trial court, the city filed a plea to the jurisdiction asserting immunity from suit, and also a motion for summary judgment asserting the defense of immunity from liability. You'll see in footnote number 7 of the Court of Appeals opinion that the issue was not raised. The issue of immunity from liability was not raised, but in truth it was. It was raised at the trial court level as an alternative ground for the court's ruling. In the Court of Appeals briefing, in the preamble of the brief, I ask the court to affirm the decision of the trial court on the ground of immunity from suit, but also, quote, alternatively, the city requests the court to affirm the judgment on the basis of the city's governmental immunity from liability. In the procedural history of the case, I pointed out in the appellee's brief that the two motions had been heard simultaneously and that the immunity from liability had been presented as an alternative ground. In the issues presented, the argument was that the city had immunity unless there's a waiver of immunity of suit or liability. So the immunity from suit and liability was in the issues presented. In the summary of argument, you'll see that the statement is that there's a novel and significant question posed by this case. whether absent any legislative authorization or oversight, and in a case where the general rule of governmental immunity would otherwise erect an insuperable bar to suit and liability were the claimant a private party or even another local governmental entity.
What case do you rely on from this court that says cities have immunity from suit against vis-a-vis the state of Texas?
There is no case that addresses this issue directly.
And what in other jurisdictions has this been addressed and adopted as principle of law that you're advocating?
There are two jurisdictions that have addressed this issue, and they are discussed extensively in the briefing. One is Ohio,
Maryland, and they've both rejected your position.
They have both rejected the position taken by the cities in those jurisdictions based on the development of the common law in those jurisdictions, as well as the constitutional structure.
And didn't City of Eagle Pass, though, address this issue? The Texas case, City of Eagle Pass versus Texas Workers' Compensation Commission.
That case, as we've discussed in the brief, takes the position that the city has no immunity from a state regulation, the regulation was imposed by a legislative act.
But that's not what the opinion was written on. The reasoning of the opinion was very much the reasoning of this Court of Appeals. That because it's derivative, it can't be asserted against the sovereign.
That's the reasoning that the court used in order to reach that result. I would submit, consistent with Justice Guy's dissent, that case could simply have been decided correctly, that on the ground that the legislature can waive the immunity of a city, and when the legislature by direct regulation provides for a statutory penalty for the city not to pay its workers' insurance compensation on time, there is a waiver of immunity from suit and liability that would otherwise attach to a governmental
policy. That would be an alternative basis for the court's holding, but that is not in fact what the court held.
That is correct, Your Honor. And to the extent that is the basis of the court's holding, I would urge that this court reject that and distinguish it on the ground that I'm suggesting.
Are you aware of any other cases around the state, not perhaps appellate cases in the books, but maybe that's more important, but any other instances where the state has sued municipalities, instances quite like this?
No, I'm not aware.
So it's not like it's a problem that's rampant around the state.
This is a first of its kind case. This is a case of first impression before this court. I'm not aware that the state of Texas has ever sued a city before for a tort.
Has the city of Galveston ever had issues with the state? I mean, this is a highway project.
Correct.
With water main break and so forth. Obviously, those kinds of things come up all the time, it would seem to me. Claims back and forth, potential claims back and forth between the state municipal entities. Has Galveston ever had problems with the state before, dealt with them, and worked out arrangements to your knowledge?
Your Honor, as I understand it, there have been disputes between those parties as far as their contracts are concerned. I'm not privy to the specific nature of those. I know that there have been some ongoing disputes. What you do see is that the legislature has provided that in circumstances like this, that the parties can allocate responsibilities and liabilities by contract. And that's one way in which the legislature has stepped in and said, to the extent that there is friction between governmental entities, that they certainly can work these things out by means of contract rather than tort litigation.
Right. It's fair to say that's mostly what happens, I guess.
I would assume that would be the way that these sorts of things would work out. In fact, one thing that we did in the trial court was to file a set of special exceptions with the assumption that the state might say, well, wait a minute, we're not claiming a tort here for which there's unlimited liability. We're claiming that there's a breach of contract. But rather than...
Your position would have been different then?
Well, my position at that point would have been, if there's a waiver of immunity from suit, then certainly by entering a contract, the act of entering the contract, as this court held in Federal Sign, it is a waiver of immunity from liability. Then the question would be immunity from suit. But
And you would take the same position or a different one, that you can't be sued?
Well, there is currently a statute on the books that the legislature passed in this previous term that has waived immunity from suit of cities for suits on contracts. And it's a limited waiver of immunity because there are only certain types of damages that can be recovered, and plus the provision for recovery of attorney's fees in a breach of contract case would not be applicable. Here, the state is suing on a tort and also invoking a statute that allows the state to sue for attorney's fees on a tort, which couldn't be recovered if it were a tort claim between private individuals. So our position is that this is something that the legislature should be involved in regulating. That the legislature can deal with these issues with a scalpel. For this court to open up a waiver of immunity and then simply ask the legislature, as the Court of Appeals did, to fill it as it sees fit. I think calls into existence the possibility, as voiced in the dissenting opinions in this case, that the next claim of this nature could be for $250 million.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. If there are no further questions, the court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Rance Kraft will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. The crux of this case is the nature of the immunity that the city is asserting as a bar to the state's suit. The city incorrectly argues that this immunity is a kind of power that the people have affirmatively delegated to all governmental entities. The Texas and federal cases tell us that immunity from suit is an inherent attribute of the state and federal governments that arises because those are the entities in which the people have vested sovereign authority, that is, supreme political authority. Now, Texas common law extends the protection of the state sovereign immunity to cities because in performing governmental functions, they are deemed to be acting as agents of the state. But it remains the state's immunity, and the state's immunity logically cannot bar a suit by the state itself.
Why is it? I don't understand that. Well, that seems to be the assumption and logic of the Court of Appeals opinion, but the legislature gives powers to all kinds of school districts, water districts, and cities, and it could take those away, but it just can't ignore them once it gives it to the subdivision. That's the part I'm missing.
But the legislature has not given immunity to the cities or other political subdivisions. Well, that's a common law construct.
So we gave it to them.
Yes.
Well, that's even more reason for them not to take it away without something. It seems to me that nobody disputes here that the state can take away what it's given, or the legislature can take away, or maybe this court can. But how can you just ignore it?
Because I would not characterize it as the state has somehow defeased immunity to local governments, and this is an act of taking it back. What the common law tells us is that it is extending the protection of the state's immunity to cities because they are acting as agents of the state. So it's still, it's not something that's been passed on. It's the state's immunity, and the umbrella of it is extending to protect cities, but it remains the state's immunity. And so to say that can keep the state itself from bringing suit is to say that one incident of the state's sovereignty can be used by one of its political subdivisions to keep it from exercising another incident of its sovereignty, which is to file suit in its own court.
But that seems very logical to me, that what the state or the constitution of the people, whatever the authority is, has given you can take away by a process, but you can't just roll over it, in other words. That there has to be some way of lifting it or removing it. But you, let me ask another question. We've said it doesn't work both ways. The city can't sue the state. What about suing horizontally, cities or districts suing each other? How do you think this affects that?
In that case, the principle is not implicated. If you've got one local governmental entity against another local governmental entity, then you don't have this situation where the state's immunity is being asserted to thwart the state itself from filing suit. So there would not be implicated. Now, in another horizontal situation where, let's say, you had one state agency suing another state agency, like TxDOT versus the Workforce Commission or something, then this principle would be implicated. You'd have the same situation where if the defendant agency was saying we're immune, that would be an attempt to assert the state's immunity against the states itself. So that illogical construct would also be implicated.
So if the state is suing the state, there would not be immunity?
Correct. But that logical principle is not implicated when you've got local governments. And then there's a policy rationale underlying that, and that is that when the state is filing suit, there's a political check involved, and that you've got a statewide official who's politically accountable to all Texans who's making a decision to bring this suit. That doesn't exist in private suits, nor does it exist when you've got one local governmental entity suing another local governmental entity.
But it wouldn't make any difference, I take it, if it were the Attorney General representing the state or outside counsel representing the state agency.
No, the dispositive feature is that it's the state that is the plaintiff.
But you don't have the check in the latter situation.
Well, if it were outside counsel, typically the way that works is that the Attorney General is supervising that outside counsel. So there is a political check even in that circumstance. Now, Chief Justice Jefferson, you asked what is the case that supports the city's position that it can assert immunity against the state, and as Mr. Biotta admitted, there is not one that specifically addresses that. And in fact, the sole basis for their theory of immunity is their misreading of this court's decision in Taylor. According to the city, Taylor holds that immunity is a kind of power that the people have delegated to all governmental entities, but Taylor doesn't say anything like that. Taylor is only about the state's sovereign immunity from suit. Cities are only mentioned in a footnote to note that there's a different label that we use when cities assert immunity. But it's talking about the nature of the state's sovereign immunity. And in discussing that, it cites Federalist Number 81, which says that sovereign immunity is an inherent attribute of the governments of the states. And it's only in the next part of the section, the next part of the discussion, where we're talking about waiver, where the court holds that notwithstanding this inherent immunity from suit, the people can always consent to suit. And what the city has done is conflated those two parts of the discussion to say that immunity is this kind of power that the people delegate to all governmental entities. But that's not what Taylor says, and no Texas case says that. In fact, they say just the opposite. In State versus Brannon, for example, in which this court adopted the reasoning of the Waco Civil Court of Appeals, the court said a city has no sovereignty of its own and likewise no immunity of its own. It borrows it from the state. Now, Alden versus Maine confirms these Texas law principles. As this court did in Taylor, Alden cites Federalist Number 81 to explain that immunity from suit is an inherent attribute of the governments of the states and the federal government. And Alden further explains that this immunity does not inhere in political subdivisions. Now, the city attempts to dismiss Alden by making the blanket statement that the state is relying on 11th Amendment cases that concern the state's immunity from suit in federal court. Not so. Alden is not an 11th Amendment case. Alden is not a suit about the state's immunity from suit in federal court. Alden was a state court case in which the state of Maine was sued in Maine's state court. So when Alden is talking about state sovereign immunity from suit, it's talking about state sovereign immunity from suit in state courts. So that discussion that we cite is germane to the issue before the court, which is the nature of the state sovereign immunity.
Counsel, address the Mr. Viada's argument that the public fisc issues are important, that whether it's the local taxpayers' money or the statewide treasury's money, that that's important and that it really serves no useful purpose to just move the money around to different government entities because it's the people's money.
Well, I don't think this court should be concerned about the shifting of public money from one local treasury to another in reaching a decision in this case, because there's a political answer to that, and beyond the fact that the Attorney General is making a decision to bring this suit and is accountable to all Texans, the legislature can always step in and restrict the state's ability to file these suits, although it has not done so. And so in that sense, this case is really about what is the right starting point. And whether the court affirms or reverses, the legislature can come in and adjust the outcome if it doesn't like what the court does. So the court should be concerned about getting the legal principles correct. And when I say what is the correct starting point, the city's starting point is that it is immune from all suits in its governmental functions, including suits by the state. The legislature has not waived specifically that immunity for suits by the state. Therefore, the suit cannot proceed. The state's starting point is that it has always had the authority as an incident of its sovereignty to bring suit in its own courts to protect the public interest when the public's rights have been invaded. The legislature has not restricted the state's ability to bring such a suit, and therefore it can proceed. I want to offer you three reasons why the state's starting point is the correct one. First of all, to accept the city's starting point, you have to accept this illogical idea that the state's immunity can bar suit by the state itself, or you have to endorse their misreading of the Taylor case to say that it's this kind of delegated power. That's not what the common law says. Second, we do have a competing principle of sovereignty here, and that is that the state has always been able to bring suit in its own courts to protect the public interest. And the Court of Appeals majority correctly recognized that a reading of the common law that gives rise to municipal immunity in a way that would keep the state from bringing that suit would work a judicial abrogation of that sovereign right. And it was wary of doing so and said we should not judicially abrogate that longstanding right of the state. We should leave that to the legislature. And finally, the city's starting point presumes that the legislature has already struck some sort of balance, that because there's nothing in the Tort Claims Act that waives immunity for a suit by the state, the legislature has decided that the state is in no better position than a private citizen when it brings suit. But there are two very different considerations at play when the state files suit. One of those I've already talked about, which is that when the state files suit, the Attorney General is making a decision to bring that suit. And that is a control that is not present when a private citizen files suit who is accountable to no one but himself.
In order to get the principles right, which I agree with you is important, we've held in Riata Construction versus the City of Dallas, which is on rehearing, but it cites two cases which preceded it, that by filing suit, the state to some extent waives its own immunity. Why isn't it that since the immunity is derived, by choosing to file suit, the Attorney General, in effect, waives the city's immunity or the derived immunity of the other entity?
Well, two responses to that, Justice Heck. First of all, as you know, the state disagrees with the decision in Riata, and we have taken the position in the amicus briefs that the act of filing suit does not waive immunity from suit. Second, there are two distinct questions. When the state files suit, it's simply making a decision to bring an action to protect the public interest. The city raised immunity as a defense to that suit. And whether that immunity exists in the first instance is a matter for the common law. And so the act of filing suit doesn't operate as some sort of implicit consent by the city to file suit. That's not at all what we're saying. So it's not the Attorney General's making this decision, I'm going to waive Galveston's immunity, I'm going to waive this county's immunity.
But it seems very close. I mean, you say it's not, but then you say, well, but the Attorney General's making the decision to file suit, and when he does, then there's no immunity there. So it seems to be very hard to distinguish.
But the reason why is not because the Attorney General has reached out and affirmatively abrogated the city's immunity. The reason is because of a limitation that's inherent in the nature of the city's immunity as it's been described at common law. So and that's the way that the city and the amici have characterized this case, of course, is that it's some kind of waiver, and they talk about, and the dissenting justices talk about, that this allows the state to go plunder local treasuries and raid city coffers, but you know, unless the people of Texas elect a Viking as Attorney General, that's not how this works. The Attorney General is reacting to damage to the public interest, filing this suit to protect that interest. Whether the city has immunity in the first instance is just a distinct issue, so that they're not connected in that sense.
But the maybe you would agree that the effect, the bottom line effect, is the same.
I would say that the result is the same, in that the city doesn't have immunity, and that this gets into the Guillory decision, where the court was addressing a proposed modification of the common law that the court said would have the effect of a waiver. In Guillory, it was the effect of a waiver because you did have a decision, a longstanding common law precedent that was specifically on point. It said navigation districts have immunity in all their functions from private suits. And so the court was being asked to reverse that, and that would be taking away an immunity that had been definitively established and that the legislature had not chosen to waive. Whereas here, we're asking the court to look at its own precedents and recognize an inherent limitation in the way it has described the extension of state sovereign immunity to cities. So we're asking the court to do something that's consistent with the common law, and to do so is not an inherently legislative task. It is a judicial task to construe your own precedents.
Could the state, the legislature, abolish cities? It creates them.
The legislature has not created the city of Galveston, because the city of Galveston is a home rule city. And so the people of Galveston have adopted a city charter through the power of self-government that they're afforded through the home rule amendment. So the legislature could not.
So the legislature could eliminate non-home rule cities.
Sure, general law municipalities, the legislature could do that.
So then home rule cities have a standing, if you will, that's more elevated than non-home rule cities. As you've described it, they can trace their source of authority directly to the Constitution.
That's correct.
So they're different in some important ways, perhaps, than non-home rule cities.
They are different, but not in any way that is germane to the issue of whether they have immunity from suit, because this court has never drawn any distinction between home rule cities and general law municipalities in terms of what is the nature of their immunity from suit. It has described how that immunity exists in exactly the same way. It is an extension of the state's sovereign immunity that protects these cities.
Well, your argument is, at least in part, that tracing the age-old concept that sovereignty derives from the king, that the king then establishes lords who are responsible to the king, and the king can decide whether to take out the lords or not, but others can't decide whether to take out the lords or not. Only the king can, correct?
I would not rest my argument on those kind of principles. I mean, we agree with the city, but its sovereignty ultimately
it's
comes
analogous from. To kings and lords. That's what the concept, where the concept derives.
Well, the analogy that was brought over from England that is described in the Federalist Papers is that because in our system of government, the people who ultimately have sovereign authority have vested that sovereign authority in the state and federal governments. They, because they have that supreme authority, that's where the analogy to the king arises, and that's why they are deemed to inherently have immunity from suit.
Okay, well, I'll frame it a different way, since you're uncomfortable with that. Political subdivisions derive their immunity from the state.
Yes.
If the political subdivision has its authority directly from the Constitution, how does that play into your argument that immunity is derivative?
Because immunity...
As you just explained, that home rule cities derive their authority directly from the Constitution.
So well, from the people through the Constitution. But immunity is not a power that the people pass out to through the Constitution to home rule cities or to other governmental entities. Immunity is an attribute that arises because the state government and the federal governments have been vested by the people with supreme political authority, sovereign authority. Home rule cities don't have sovereign authority. They are not sovereigns because although they have the power of self-government, the legislature can always come in and limit that power. Because they do not, therefore, occupy the position of a sovereign, they do not have the inherent attribute of immunity from suit.
Was immunity from liability in before the CA, before the Court of Appeals?
Yeah, we don't disagree with the city's description of that, but the principle is the same because the immunity from suit and liability comes from the same source. It is the state's immunity.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
I think that everyone will agree that the sovereign in Texas is the people. It's not the state. The state, to the extent that the state is sovereign, it is a derived sovereignty. Our Constitution provides that. And that is a very black letter law, that sovereignty ultimately resides with the people. Now, why is it that sovereign immunity exists? That's what Taylor addresses. It starts with the premise that it is the people who are the sovereign, that the people have an interest in protecting the public best, and that the court then looks to the institution of state government who speaks for the people in terms of questions about the allocation of public resources like governmental funds. That's the reason why sovereign immunity exists. It could be waived completely by the people tomorrow, or presumably by the legislature tomorrow. And what would be inherent in the state's immunity? The people have the power through these institutions to waive the immunity. In the Guillory case, the Supreme Court recognized the fact that the impact on local treasuries of tort judgments is an impact that affects the people as a whole. And so that's why the legislature has an interest in it, and that's why the legislature has always had an interest in it. When these cases speak in terms of the governmental entities sharing the state's immunity, we're not talking about the constituent element of state government here before this court as the plaintiff. We're speaking about the state government. And so in all these cases where there's reference to cities or agents of the state, what that really means is that cities are carrying out agencies of government for the benefit of the people, and to that extent, it shares the government's sovereign immunity. It's the same immunity, as this court has already said. The legislature has weighed in amending the Code Construction Act, when courts would construe the word person in some of their statutes to mean that a governmental entity, and if a statute applies or creates a cause of action against a person, that in effect waives sovereign immunity. The legislature in that provision that clarified that made the point that we, the legislature, have an interest in protecting the solvency, the financial integrity, the ability of government at all levels to carry out its governmental functions.
But all this could be taken care of. I mean, assuming we agree that immunity is inherent, an inherent attribute of the people, and there is no right, no immunity in this situation for municipalities. Everything that you've just said says this can be placed in the legislature's hands in the next session, and the legislature can give the state, the city's immunity from suits by the state.
I would assume that's correct. I haven't researched all the implications of that, whether or not the legislature could give the city's immunity. I know that in the case of Ohio, for example, where the court by fiat eliminated local governmental immunity with the stroke of a pen, that the legislature very quickly thereafter stepped in and passed a local governmental immunity act that put back in place essentially what the court had removed through an act of the judiciary. The point is that the rationale for the immunity is directly related to this court's decision to look to the legislature to tinker with that system, because it does involve allocation of resources decisions which are essentially a legislative function under our separation of powers. There is no inherent immunity. There was a case that came down out of the Fifth Circuit called Myers versus Texas in May of 2005 where the Fifth Circuit talked about the Alden decision and made the point that under the structure of the United States Constitution, there is it allows for variation between the nature and structure of each state's immunities from suit and liability. I wanted to address the point that was raised by counsel that the Alden decision or the nature of our federal government requires that the state in this context be regarded as an inherent sovereign. The point is that. The Supreme Court of the United States has long held the view that sovereign immunity is a privilege that each state may waive at its pleasure, and as a result, the patterns of sovereign immunities maintained by the states may vary considerably, and they do. Are there any other questions?
Hearing none, the cause is submitted, and the court will now take a brief recess.
All right.